This is in connection with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's meeting with the Mayavadi sannyasis in Benares, and how he, by speaking to them, they were actually transformed in their outlook. He's just been questioned as to why he's doing all this chanting and dancing with fanatics. Why do you do that? They're asking, why don't you study Vedanta and perform austerities and so forth like we do? Why do you not join us instead of carrying on in this way with sentimentalists? So then he begins to answer in a very humble fashion. He says that his spiritual master advised him that he wasn't really fit for studying Vedanta. Now, it's funny in a way, because of course Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was one of the greatest scholars of his day. In Navadvip, he had actually had an encounter with this Keshava Kashmiri, the Digvijay, who claimed he could defeat anyone in debate. So when he met with Lord Chaitanya, Lord Chaitanya said, "My dear sir, you're very learned. Could you please compose some verses in glorification of the Ganges?" So he said, "Of course." He was a very proud scholar. And he began to chant. He spontaneously composed 100 verses in glorification of the Ganges. So afterwards, all these verses had been chanted. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu turned to him and said, "In such and such a verse, I see that you've said this," and he quoted some portion of it. He said, "But actually, this is a flaw." And then he gave the explanation, and he quoted another verse and said, "There's another flaw here." And in this way, he pointed out all the defects in this composition. So this great pundit was kind of overwhelmed and didn't know what to make of it. And then the goddess Saraswati, who he was very devoted to, appeared to him in his dream and said, "Actually, this person that you're trying to debate is the Supreme Lord himself. You should go and take shelter of him immediately." So he did so. So he was a great scholar, but he's presenting himself in a very humble fashion. He's saying, "My spiritual master said that I wasn't really fit to understand Vedanta, so he told me to chant the holy name instead. He said, 'You're a fool.' He said, 'You are not qualified to study Vedanta philosophy, and therefore you must always chant the holy name of Krishna. This is the essence of all mantras or Vedic hymns.'" So in this way, he's actually instructing the Benares sannyasis. I mean, he's repeating the words of his spiritual master, but in such a way that he's actually simultaneously instructing them. That this is the essence of Vedic hymns. You're studying Vedanta. Here's the essence of Vedanta. Chant the holy name of Krishna. So then he said, simply, this is quoting his guru, "Simply by chanting the holy name, one can attain freedom from material existence. Indeed, simply by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, one will be able to see the lotus feet of the Lord." And then he quotes, "In this age of Kali, there is no other religious principle than the chanting of the holy name, which is the essence of all Vedic hymns. This is the purport of all scriptures. After describing the potency of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, my spiritual master taught me another verse advising me to always keep the name within my throat." Then he quotes, of course, the famous verse, "Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nascheva, Nascheva, Nascheva. Gatiranyata." So, three times for emphasis. "Then, since I received this word from my spiritual master, I always chant the holy name. But I think that by chanting and chanting the holy name, I have become bewildered. While chanting the holy name of the Lord in pure ecstasy, I lose myself, and thus I laugh, cry, dance, and sing just like a madman. Collecting my patience, therefore, I began to consider that chanting the holy name of Krishna had covered all my spiritual knowledge. I saw that I had become mad by chanting the holy name. And I immediately submitted this at the lotus feet of my spiritual master. My dear Lord, what kind of... So this is the verse that we're going to chant. I'm getting a little ahead of myself here. So today's verse, text 80. I saw that I had become mad by chanting the holy name, and I immediately submitted this at the lotus feet of my spiritual master. Purport. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as an ideal teacher, shows us how a disciple should deal with his spiritual master. Whenever there is doubt regarding any point, he should refer the matter to his spiritual master for clarification. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that while chanting and dancing, he had developed the kind of mad ecstasy that is possible only for a liberated soul. Yet, even in his liberated position, he referred everything to his spiritual master whenever there were doubts. Thus, in any condition, even when liberated, we should never think ourselves independent of the spiritual master, but must refer to him as soon as there is some doubt regarding our progressive spiritual life. So this is a very significant point, significant principle in Krishna consciousness. That, well, first of all, the principle of consultation. That if one becomes proud and thinks that he doesn't need to consult anyone, anytime that we find ourselves thinking that we don't need to consult anyone, that means we're in trouble. So... this pride is actually one of the greatest obstacles to advancement in Krishna consciousness. If we think, oh, I already know everything. Or, I don't need to ask anybody about this. I know what I'm doing. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of course, taking the role of the perfect disciple of his spiritual master, even though he is situated from the very beginning on the highest platform of love of God, still he's consulting. He's showing by his own personal example that one should always consult the spiritual master or consult the advanced Vaishnavas. Even if you see in the... how did the Srimad Bhagavatam come about? It came about on this principle, actually. Because Vyas had composed so many Vedic literatures, including Mahabharata and other literatures, so many Vedas, Upanishads. But he was feeling despondent. He felt that there was something missing, that there was something lacking. So he wasn't sure what it was. So he consulted immediately his spiritual master. Narada Muni appeared, and immediately he consulted him. Why am I feeling this despondency? So immediately Narada Muni told him, you've composed many wonderful literatures, but you've not sufficiently glorified the Supreme Lord, Personality of Godhead. And because you haven't sufficiently glorified the Lord, you're feeling that there's something lacking in your life. That your job has not been completed, that your work is incomplete, insufficient. And so in this way he began to instruct him, and Vyas was re-inspired by that instruction, and then he composed the great Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the commentary, the natural commentary on Vedanta Sutra. Here the Banaras sannyasis are talking about Vedanta, but the mature commentation on Vedanta is actually this Srimad Bhagavatam. This is mentioned in the Garuda Purana. And so therefore, by consultation, his doubts were cleared and he became completely inspired and he composed this great literature. So because he wasn't too arrogant, he didn't have any arrogance, and he immediately consulted a higher authority. Narada Muni is the spiritual master of everyone. So he immediately consulted him, and in this way he was able to go forward. So Prabhupada writes here, he referred everything to his spiritual master whenever there were doubts. Thus, in any condition, even when liberated, we should never think ourselves independent of the spiritual master, but must refer to him as soon as there is some doubt regarding our progressive spiritual life. There was an incident which I witnessed in Vrindavan. One of Prabhupada's disciples who had a scholarly nature, he began to associate with different people in Vrindavan. Some of them were critical of Prabhupada's, the way Prabhupada had presented Krishna consciousness. They were critical even of the line of disciplic succession, saying that it wasn't a legitimate line of succession. So he, by taking association with these people, he began to think that, oh, there's something bogus about this way that we're doing, practicing Krishna consciousness in ISKCON. And so then he began to preach that, because he'd read something in Chaitanya Bhagavad, that unless one chanted a lack of names every day, that Lord Chaitanya wouldn't accept his offerings. So he began to preach this in the temple, and saying that, oh, we've got the tilak wrong. And there's so many criticisms, anyway, he was making. And at that time, I was trying to run the Gurukul, and he was the only relief we had, because he taught 1 hour of Sanskrit class every day. But he was acting in such a peculiar way, and then he disappeared. So then, sometime later, Prabhupada came to Vrindavan, and I went to see about maybe getting another Sanskrit teacher. So I sat down and I asked Prabhupada, I said, Prabhupada, your disciple has left, who was teaching, I'm not mentioning his name, anyway, I could mention his name, but I'll leave off for now. Anyway, I said, this person who was teaching Sanskrit, he's disappeared, and I was trying to see if I could get Dayananda Prabhu, my godbrother, to come and teach instead. So I said, he didn't seem to have so much taste for teaching anyway. And then Prabhupada was looking at me quite intensely, and he said, what has he got taste for? So I thought, oh, you know, I wasn't sure what was happening. So I said, I think he likes to study languages and he likes to write articles for Back to Godhead, Prabhupada. What has he written? I said, well, I don't know exactly. And he said, I tell you what he's got taste for. He said he's got taste for going to live in Radhakund and associating with nonsense rascals. You know, like this, at that time there was a sort of a Sahajiya character living in Radhakund who used to try to impress all the devotees with his ecstatic symptoms. They weren't really ecstatic symptoms. He was a Sahajiya. But he said, he's associating with nonsense rascals like this Krishnadas Babaji, he said. This was not the Prabhupada's godbrother. This was a different Krishnadas Babaji. And then he was like really like roaring away, you know, about this person. Now, the whole time that Prabhupada was doing this, I was thinking, now how am I going to get my Sanskrit teacher? Prabhupada's upset and he's going on about this person. And I didn't really understand his mood. The mood was that he was very concerned about this disciple. He was thinking, is there any way he can be brought back? Is there any way he can be reinstated into service? Is there any way he can be rescued from this kind of illusion that he's in? Because he was thinking that he knew more than Prabhupada. He was actually thinking like that. And that he understood something that Prabhupada didn't. That he was on the right path and that Prabhupada somehow wasn't. Can you imagine the level of arrogance? Rather than consulting his guru, he was thinking he knew better than the guru. So this is a very serious defect. So Prabhupada was thinking simply, how can I save this disciple? Because he had mentioned many times that to make one devotee, we have to shed gallons of blood. This is a metaphor in a sense, but it means with tremendous effort and difficulty, we turn someone towards Krishna consciousness. So if we lose them, that is a great loss. So he was simply thinking, how can I help this person? How can I save this disciple? So I kept bringing up, well, can we get another person to teach Sanskrit? But he wasn't really ready to deal with that yet. So anyway, later on, this same disciple wrote Prabhupada a letter explaining how he had rejected ISKCON and that he asked for Prabhupada's blessings that he could find a different guru. So Prabhupada's comment was, he said, if I'm supposed to be bogus, then what would be the point of asking for me for my blessings? And then he sent out a letter, actually, through the GBC saying this person's like a poisonous snake. Has become like a poisonous snake. And that be very careful of him. So the point is, again, this is the disease. The disease of conceit. There's a famous songwriter who wrote a song once called The Disease of Conceit. And he had a good line in the song. He said, and they bury you from your head to your feet from the disease of conceit. Meaning you may be puffed up, you may be arrogant, you may be proud, but in the end, you'll be 6 feet under. So this disease of conceit is a very pernicious disease. So we should try our best to avoid it. If there's any doubt, refer the matter, Prabhupada says, to the spiritual master for clarification. So this is one theme that's generated out of this verse. Another theme, he said, I saw that I had become mad by chanting the holy name. So this madness, this ecstasy that that the Lord had achieved, he was questioning it. He wanted to know whether, you know, it was just some kind of peculiar sentiment, whether it was some kind of mental aberration. He wanted to hear authoritatively that he was all right. And this is all leading up to the verse that his guru cites to him. In the 88th text, I think. When one actually develops love of Godhead, he naturally sometimes cries, sometimes laughs, sometimes chants. And sometimes runs here and there just like a madman. So this verse from the Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 2, Text 40. When a person is actually advanced and takes pleasure in chanting the holy name of the Lord, who is very dear to him, he is agitated and loudly chants the holy name. He also laughs, cries, becomes agitated, and chants just like a madman, not caring for outsiders. So this is describing a very elevated position where one is situated in bhava or prema, bhakti. And these are the characteristics. He loudly chants. He also laughs, cries. When you read the descriptions of Haridas Thakur, who was living in a hut that was a little like a cave on the bank of the Ganges, and this is something that Dvaita Acharya had arranged for him, that he used to chant his rounds walking up and down the bank of the Ganges, and that he would exhibit all these symptoms, laughing, crying, and chanting like a madman. Sometimes he would bellow. Different symptoms are exhibited. So in this verse that's cited here in the 11th canto, this was spoken, it says, by Narada Muni to Vasudev to teach him about Bhagavad Dharma. So this is the verse. In the purport, the Prabhupada's disciples have quoted from various parts of the commentaries of different Vaishnavacharyas and also from Prabhupada's other purports. So it's a very nice purport. I'm going to read that. It says, in this verse, pure love of God is being described. Srila Sridhar Swami has described this spiritual situation as samprapta premalakshana Bhakti Yogasya Sangsara Dharmati Tang Gatim, or the perfectional stage of life in which one's devotional service to the Supreme Lord is enriched by ecstatic love. So bhava, ecstatic love. At that time, one's spiritual duties are entirely beyond the scope of worldly affairs. In Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's the following statement by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. While chanting the holy name of the Lord in pure ecstasy, I lose myself, and thus I laugh, cry, dance, and sing just like a madman. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu immediately approached his spiritual master to ask him why he had apparently become mad by chanting the holy name of Krishna. His guru replied, Krishna nama mahamantrera eta svabhav ye jape tara krishne upajaye bhav. It is the nature of the Hare Krishna mahamantra that anyone who chants it immediately develops his loving ecstasy for Krishna. In this connection, Srila Prabhupada has commented, these symptoms are very prominently manifest in the body of a pure devotee. Sometimes when our students of the Krishna consciousness movement chant and dance, even in India, people are astonished to see how these foreigners have learned to chant and dance in this ecstatic fashion. As explained by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, however, actually this is not due to practice. For without extra endeavor, these symptoms become manifest in anyone who sincerely chants the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur has warned us in this regard about the ungodly sahajiyas who imitate the pastimes of the Supreme Lord in an unauthorized way, neglecting the standard injunctions of Vedic scriptures, foolishly trying to take the position of Krishna as Purushottama and thus making a cheap farce of the exalted pastimes of the Lord. So here we see Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's warning against imitating the behavior of these elevated devotees. He says they turn the whole thing into a farce by imitating ecstatic symptoms. So the point is, you're either there or you're not. There's no point of pretense, because it turns it into, as he says, it turns it into a farce. Their so-called ecstatic symptoms like crying, shivering, and falling on the ground are not to be confused with the advanced features of devotional service described by Sridhar Swami as samprapta prema lakshana bhakti yoga. Srila Prabhupada comments in this regard, one who has attained this bhava stage is no longer under the clutches of the illusory energy. So it means if you're not free from the influence of maya, then there's no point of imitatively trying to show your great advancement by exhibiting an exhibition of false symptoms. Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami also states, for a devotee who has actually developed bhava, love of Godhead, the pleasure derived from dharma, artha, kama, and moksha appears like a drop in the presence of the sea. As already stated in the previous verse of this chapter, Dhyan Vilajo Vicharet Asanga, one exhibits the ecstatic symptoms of love of Godhead when he is asanga, free from all attachment to material sense gratification. So I think all of us have to be, we have to be honestly introspective. If we're not free from all attachment to sense gratification, then there's no point in trying to advertise oneself as a great devotee. Of course, there's no point in trying to advertise yourself as a great devotee anyway. That's not what great devotees do. They simply serve Krishna favorably. The word loka bhaya in this verse indicates that a pure devotee on the platform of prema, love of Godhead, is not at all concerned with ridicule, praise, respect, or criticism from ordinary people in the bodily concept of life. Krishna is the absolute truth, the supreme personality of Godhead, and when he reveals himself to a surrendered servant, all doubt and speculation about the nature of the absolute are vanquished forever. In this connection, Sri Padmadvacharya has quoted a verse from the Varaha Purana. Some devotees of the Lord exhibit external symptoms, acting like madmen. Others are introspective devotees. And still others partake of both natures. It is by one's steadfastness and by the merciful vibrations emanating from one's mouth that one's devotion can be judged, not otherwise. So this is a very wonderful verse by Madhvacharya, quoting from Varaha Purana, and he explains that all these, the external symptoms, some people exhibit them. Sometimes, even despite one's efforts, one cannot keep from exhibiting them. Like Prabhupada sometimes would enter into trance or not be able to speak because of ecstatic feelings. Sometimes those feelings would overwhelm him. But it says others are introspective. They keep it all within. Just like a famous incident in the Nectar Devotion is described, that Daruka, the chariot driver of Krishna, was fanning Krishna, and he began to feel ecstatic because out of love of Krishna, he began to feel ecstasy, and his arm began to tremble. So then he with great effort, he suppressed his ecstatic symptoms because it was interfering with his service of fanning Krishna. So a great devotee is more interested in service than exhibitions of ecstasy. So that's another point. It's not that, someone's exhibiting ecstatic symptoms, so they must be really advanced. Well, what Madhvacharya says, it is by one's steadfastness. What it means, by steadily executing that service to Krishna, by one's steadfastness, and by the merciful vibrations emanating from one's mouth. So that means one who is simply absorbed in trying to communicate the urgency of Krishna consciousness and the power and glory of chanting the holy name of the Lord. One who is completely absorbed in that, that's the way you can judge a person's devotion, practically by what they do to help others become Krishna conscious. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has given a very nice example to illustrate ecstatic laughing and other symptoms of love of Godhead. Oh, that thief Krishna, the son of Yasoda, has entered the house to steal the fresh butter. Grab him! Keep him away! Hearing these menacing words spoken by the elderly gopi Jarati, Krishna immediately prepares to leave the house. The devotee to whom this transcendental pastime is revealed laughs in ecstasy. But suddenly, he can no longer see Krishna. He then cries in great lamentation, "Oh, I achieved the greatest fortune in the world, and now it has suddenly slipped from my hands." Thus the devotee cries loudly, "Oh, my Lord, where are you? Give me your answer." The Lord answers, "My dear devotee, I heard your loud complaint, and so I have again come before you." Upon seeing Lord Krishna again, the devotee begins to sing, "Today my life has become perfect." Thus, overwhelmed with transcendental bliss, he begins to dance like a madman. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur also notes that the word druta chitta, or with a melted heart, indicates that one's heart, melted by the fire of anxiety to see the Lord, becomes like Jambunada, a river of rose apple juice. The Acharya further points out, nama kirtanasya sarvot karshang. The present and previous verse clearly distinguish the exalted position of shravanam kirtanam Vishnu, chanting and hearing the name and glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also emphasized this by quoting, Harir nama, harir nama, harir nama eva kevalam, kalo nascheva, 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 gatiranyata. In this age of Kali, there is no alternative. There is no alternative. There is no alternative for spiritual progress but the holy name, the holy name, the holy name of the Lord. In his purports to Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adilila 776, Srila Prabhupada has given an elaborate explanation of this verse. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur recommends that we study the following verse in this connection. Let the garrulous population say whatever they like. We shall pay them no regard. Thoroughly maddened by the ecstasy of the intoxicating beverage of love for Krishna, we shall enjoy life running about, rolling on the ground, and dancing in ecstasy. Padyavali, verse 73. So this is a fairly extensive commentary on this ecstatic symptoms that are described here in this verse by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he was thinking it was madness. And he was reassured by his spiritual master, this is not madness, you've actually achieved the perfection of life. So just hearing these topics from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the sannyasis of Benares were completely... Just hearing him speak, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and he writes a description, I mentioned the last time I gave class, he writes a description about this incident of the meeting between the Benares sannyasis and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and it says that it wasn't exactly what he said, but he said there was a spell about him that touched their hearts and made them weep for their lack of spiritual advancement. So the presence of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so powerful that when they were just by being in his company, by being in his association, and hearing him speak about the power of chanting, they all began to spontaneously chant. And then they wanted him to speak about, even though he had said that he wasn't qualified to speak about Vedanta Sutra, they more or less insisted that he speak about it. And he spoke about it in such a wonderful way that they all joined him in Sankirtan in the streets of Benares. So he actually completely transformed their hearts by his association. So this is the power of a great devotee. Lord Chaitanya was taking the part of the greatest devotee. The power of a great devotee is just by a small amount of association. Sadhu sangha sarva shastri koi lava matra sadhu sangha sarva siddhi hoy. Even by a moment's association, that one can achieve the highest perfection. Since there's still some amount of time, I don't know exactly when. How long am I supposed to speak? Do you know? Well, I'm gonna. I hope you'll indulge me. I've been writing a book about Prabhupada, partly personal experiences and partly, you know, just commentary on those experiences, and sometimes other devotees' experiences as well. So, the title of the book's going to be Without Fear, because, well, for one thing, that'll come out when I read this, but also Prabhupada's name even means that, Abhay Charan. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gave him the name Abhay Charanaravinda Das, fearless at the lotus feet of Krishna. So that I've called this chapter Without Fear, and it's based on a brief incident that took place, and then there's some philosophical commentary also. So I'm going to read it, and hopefully it'll be something useful. Srila Prabhupada gave some memorable lectures in Dallas, Texas. The temple room had previously been a basketball court, so it was quite large and could accommodate many visitors. It was the sound in that temple room originally, when it was first, of course, it's been very elaborately transformed now. I don't know if you've seen any pictures of the Dallas temple. It's quite a gorgeous place. But at that time, when we first had it, it just still looked like a basketball court. We painted it, but... it was pretty barren. Anyway, but you could fit a lot of people in it, so that was the good part. In one such lecture to a packed house in 1972, Srila Prabhupada spoke powerfully and with tremendous conviction about self-realization and how it could be achieved. At the end of the class, someone raised a question, which in essence asked what it was like to be transcendentally situated, to be a self-realized soul. Srila Prabhupada considered the question for a few moments, and then he spoke two memorable words, without fear. And then he smiled in a way that Sally Agarwal, the wife of Srila Prabhupada's first sponsor in Butler, Pennsylvania, said could only be described as oceanic. As he uttered those words, I felt trembling. The hairs of my body stood on end. I had goosebumps, and I felt fearless, ecstatic, and emotional all at once. I felt a little self-conscious, not wanting to make a display of my feelings. But as I looked around the room, I saw that many other devotees had jubilant expressions on their faces. It was as though a wave of ecstatic energy had emanated from Srila Prabhupada and then passed through us. For a few moments, we knew what it was like to be situated in transcendence, fearless and blissful. I later questioned some of the other devotees about the experience, and they confirmed that they had also temporarily felt that same fearless, ecstatic state that Srila Prabhupada had articulated. Years later, I read in the Sri Chaitanya Shikshamrita by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur that by the association of a Madhyamadikari, one could gain Shraddha, or faith. But by the association of an Uttamadikari, one could experience symptoms of bhava. In fact, devotees often experience symptoms of bhava in Srila Prabhupada's association in greetings at airports, in kirtan, in classes, in conversations, on morning walks. Physical symptoms of ecstasy are described in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu of Srila Rupa Goswami. Stumbha, being stunned. Sveda, perspiring. Romancha, hair standing on end. Svarabheda, choking. Vepatu or kampa, trembling. Vaivarnya, fading of color. Ashru, weeping. And pralaya or murcha, devastation. Such symptoms are sometimes imitated by a class of so-called devotees called Prakriti Sahajyas. For name and fame, they imitate such symptoms so that they can acquire sentimental followers and wealth. However, great devotees are not interested in any symptoms which interfere with their service. So I'm going to give here the same example I gave earlier, that Daruka, the chariot driver of Krishna, was feeling these ecstatic symptoms, but it threatened his ability to continue his fanning, so he repressed them. From this example, we are led to understand that service of great souls and the greatest soul is more important than trying to enjoy ecstatic symptoms. Therefore, in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Srila Rupa Goswami emphasizes that the more important symptoms of bhava, which are much harder, if not impossible, to imitate, are as follows. Forgiveness. Concern that time should not be wasted. Detachment. Absence of false prestige. Hope. Eagerness. A taste for chanting the holy name of the Lord. Attachment to descriptions of the transcendental qualities of the Lord. And affection for those places where the Lord resides. So these symptoms are considered to be more significant because they can't be faked, basically. They can't be faked. If someone has real attachment to chanting, is not at all attached to any kind of false prestige, adoration, profit, and distinction, and doesn't want to waste a single moment but always be absorbed in Krishna's service, then those are significant symptoms. Nevertheless, to gain a temporary glimpse of that blissful, fearless state and to experience the mind and heart altering physical symptoms of bhava was conducive to rapid development of faith in the process of bhakti yoga and the importance of association with the pure Vaishnava, Srila Prabhupada. It was like an introductory offer, a glimpse of real Krishna consciousness. You know how they have these introductory offers sometimes. I don't know, they used to at least. So many DVDs, you can get so many DVDs, you get like 10 or 12 DVDs for the price of one, but then you have to join some club and then you have to start paying a lot of dues thereafter. So this was like the introductory offer. He transformed hearts and minds like a spiritual alchemist or magician. He was able to do so because of his unalloyed devotion to his spiritual master in Krishna, and is being situated on the topmost platform of pure devotion as an Uttama Adhikari, a Mahatma, a great empowered Vaishnava. Srila Prabhupada writes, this is from Nectar of Devotion, this imitative attachment can be divided into two headings, namely shadow attachment and pura, transcendental attachment. Sometimes it is found that a person actually attached to material enjoyment or salvation has the good fortune to associate with pure devotees while they are engaged in chanting the holy name of the Lord. By the good grace of the Lord, one may also cooperate and join in the chanting. At that time, simply by the association of such pure devotees, the moon-like rays from their hearts reflect on him. So it's described that the pure devotee emanates this, he says a moon-like ray, means by his presence, his by his association, one is actually transformed. And by the influence of the pure devotees, he may show some likeness of attachment caused by inquisitiveness. But this is very flickering. And if by the manifestation of such shadow attachment one feels the disappearance of all material pangs, then it is called para, transcendental attachment. So it may be a shadow of that ecstasy that the pure devotee is experiencing, that you will experience by contact. In the hippie days, they used to call, if somebody was intoxicated and you got around that person, that just by their association, you would get what they called a contact high. So it's a little bit, the great devotees experience an ecstasy. You may not be on that platform, but by being near them, by being in their company, temporarily you experience those symptoms. But by experiencing those symptoms, one cannot forget that taste. And therefore that becomes one of the impetus to go on sincerely practicing Krishna consciousness. So it says, if an ordinary man develops such attachment for Krishna and fortunately performs devotional activities in the association of pure devotees, he can also rise to the platform of pure devotional service. The conclusion is that transcendental attachment is so powerful that if such attachment is seen manifested even in some common man, by the association of a pure devotee, it can bring one to the perfectional stage. So that's why the company of a great devotee is so important. Because by that association, one actually gets a glimpse of ecstatic love. Even though one may not be able to remain on that platform, just by getting that glimpse, one gets the inspiration to go on sincerely practicing Krishna consciousness and ultimately come to this transcendental platform. It says, but such attachment for Krishna cannot be invoked in a person without his being sufficiently blessed by the association of pure devotees. So there are many, many statements in Shastra about this fearless condition. This is from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18, verse 54. It is said that in order to make spiritual progress, one must become fearless. Abhayam satvasang shuddhi. Fearfulness is the result of material involvement. So that means when one is absorbed materially, the natural state is fear. Sometimes Prabhupada translates eating, sleeping, mating. We say defending. He also translates it sometimes as fearing. So eating, sleeping, mating, and fearing. And fearing is the prominent symptom of the materially conditioned living entity. Fearing, being afraid. This is actually the common symptom of most people in this world. So it says that it's a creation, this is mentioned in the 11th canto, it's a creation of the bodily conception of life. So if you're in the bodily concept of life, that means you'll be fearful. Now why? Why would we be fearful? In the bodily conception of life, why should you be any more fearful than any other state, any other kind of situation? But even if you know that that your existence in this realm is temporary, why should that make you afraid? Why should you be afraid? It's just the way it is. In fact, some people will argue with you like that. They'll say, I'm not afraid of death. I know that life is temporary, but it's just the way it is. I accept that. Yes. Yes, if you think that you've got, you become very attached. I mean, people may claim that they have no attachment to being alive, but generally people will cling very fiercely to life. if there's some threat of their life being extinguished, they'll do practically anything to try to preserve themselves, try to preserve this body. So it's a bit of a bluff. If somebody says, oh, I'm not afraid, that's a bluff. If one is on the bodily platform, he's afraid. He's afraid of losing what he's got. He's afraid of losing that his life. So fear is a natural condition. It says, as long as one is absorbed in the thought that he is this material body, he is fearful. And as soon as one is freed from this material conception, he becomes Brahmabhuta, or self-realized, immediately becomes fearless. Brahmabhuta, prasanatma, joyful. That's from Bhagavad Gita, 18th chapter, verse 54. Another one, without being fearless, one cannot be joyful. So that's taking it from the other point of view. Without becoming fearless, one cannot be joyful. The bhaktas, the devotees, are fearless and always joyful because they are constantly engaged in the service of the lotus feet of the Lord. By practicing Bhagavad Bhakti Yoga, one becomes fearless and joyful. Unless one becomes fearless and joyful, he cannot understand the science of God. Not fully. So one has to come to this platform by gradual advancement, by practice. Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam Mukta Sangasya Jayate. This verse refers to those who are completely liberated from the fearfulness of this material world. When one is so liberated, he can really understand the transcendental features of the form of the Lord. Lord Shiva therefore advises everyone to practice Bhagavad Bhakti Yoga. As will be clear in the following verses, by doing so one can become really liberated and enjoy spiritual bliss. Srila Prabhupada exhibited this quality of fearlessness in all of his activities, in his taking sannyas, his single-handed efforts to publish and preach in India, in his journey to New York, in his full dependence on Krishna in every circumstance, in his confronting dangers and obstacles, in his bold presentation of Krishna consciousness, in his meetings with powerful politicians, clergymen and leaders, and finally, in his fearless meeting with death. And this is some more verses. O King, constant chanting of the holy name after the ways of the great authorities is the doubtless and fearless way of success for all, including those who are free from all material desires and those who are desirous of all material enjoyment, and also those who are self-satisfied by dint of transcendental knowledge. Constant chanting. It says that is the doubtless and fearless way of success. So it's actually a very simple thing, this Krishna consciousness. We chant, but we chant a little and then we stop. But if here it says that the goal of chanting is to chant more and more. Satatang kirtayanto mam. So that's the goal, is chanting. The goal of chanting is more chanting. So then another statement, the yogis equipped with transcendental knowledge and renunciation and engaged in devotional service for their eternal benefit take shelter of my lotus feet. And since I am the Lord, they are thus eligible to enter into the kingdom of Godhead without fear. The surrendered souls are called akuto bhaya. They are doubtless and fearless, and their entrance into the spiritual kingdom is guaranteed. Now this is an interesting one by Kardama Muni, speaking to Devahuti. He says, I have achieved the blessings of the Lord in discharging my own religious life of austerity, meditation, and Krishna consciousness. Although you have not yet experienced these achievements, which are free from fear and lamentation, I shall offer them all to you because you are engaged in my service. So these great souls, they can benedict like this. He says, you haven't experienced these things, which are free from fear and lamentation. You haven't experienced this, but I shall offer them all to you because you are engaged in my service. Now just look at them. I am giving you the transcendental vision to see how nice they are. So this great soul is actually, he's saying, you know, you haven't come to this platform yet, but I want you to know how wonderful those things are that are awaiting you. So here's, you have a look at how wonderful this state of Krishna consciousness is. So as Kardama Muni points out, we, the followers of Srila Prabhupada, may not be permanently situated in this fearless state, born out of the mercy of the Lord and His representatives. However, Srila Prabhupada was giving us a taste of fearless happiness and indicated that there was plenty more where that had come from. He, like Kardama Muni, was offering us a glimpse or shadow of bhava, of fearlessness and ecstasy, because we were engaged in devotional service and were thus giving pleasure to both Him and the Supreme Lord. By enthusing the servant of the Lord as He had enthused us, just like in the Gayatri Mantra, there's a line which means, let us enthuse Him to the spiritual master. Let us enthuse Him as He has enthused us. So, Krishna was pleased that we had pleased His representative, all we knew of Krishna. And as the Chaitya Guru, Krishna was awarding us that transcendental glimpse. I am giving you the transcendental vision to see how nice these achievements are. What are the great, this is a quote from the commentary. What are the graces of the Lord? It is stated here that the graces of the Lord are abhaya, free from fearfulness. That's one of the graces of the Lord. It's described as a grace of the Lord. To get this state of not being afraid anymore, this is the grace of God. In the material world, if someone accumulates $1 million, he is always full of fear because he is always thinking, what if the money is lost? But the benediction of the Lord, Bhagavat Prasad, is never to be lost. It is simply to be enjoyed. There is no question of loss. One simply gains and enjoys gaining. Bhagavad Gita also confirms this. When one achieves the grace of the Lord, the result is that sarva dukhani, all the stresses, are destroyed. When situated in the transcendental position, one is freed from the two kinds of material diseases, hankering and lamentation. Brahmabhuta prasanatma na sochati na kangshati. No more lamentation. No more hankering and lamentation. So you're freed from those two kinds of material. They call them diseases here. Hankering, lamenting. These are diseases. Of course, we don't think of them like that at the time we're hankering, lamenting. Just hankering, lamenting away. But here it says they're diseases, and we can become free from those diseases by elevation in Krishna consciousness. So this is also stated in Bhagavad Gita. After devotional life begins, we can achieve the full result of love of Godhead. Love of Krishna is the highest perfection of Bhagavat Prasad, or divine mercy. And this one is from, most of these verses I'm reading here are from the Srimad Bhagavatam. This transcendental achievement is so greatly valuable that no material happiness can compare to it. So whatever the greatest thing that's ever happened to us materially, whatever it was, you know, the most happiest time of our lives in a material sense, it says that achieving this state of higher consciousness, that no material happiness can compare to it. Prabodhananda Saraswati said that if one achieves the grace of Lord Chaitanya, he becomes so great that he does not care a fig, even for the demigods. He thinks of monism as hellish, and for him, the perfection of controlling the senses is as easy as anything. Heavenly pleasures become to him no more than stories. Actually, there is no comparison between material happiness and transcendental happiness. Thus, jara, the effect of old age, does not harass a devotee. Of course, I don't know if I, you know, I'm definitely experiencing the symptoms of old age these days. So when it says it doesn't harass a devotee, I guess it means an advanced devotee. Sometimes I feel a bit harassed by symptoms of jara. But anyway, if one is a sincere devotee, says the effect of old age doesn't harass you. This is because a devotee follows the instructions and the determination of Narada Muni. All devotees are in the disciplic succession stemming from Narada Muni because they worship the deity according to Narada Muni's direction, namely the Narada Pancharatra, or the Pancharatrika Vidhi. A devotee follows the principles of Pancharatrika Vidhi as well as Bhagavad Vidhi. Bhagavad Vidhi includes preaching work, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu, the hearing and chanting of the glories of Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Pancharatrika Vidhi includes Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, and Atmanivedanam. Because a devotee rigidly follows the instructions of Narada Muni, he has no fear of old age, disease, or death. Apparently, a devotee may grow old, but he is not subjected to the symptoms of defeat experienced by a common man in old age. Consequently, old age does not make a devotee fearful of death as a common man is fearful of death. When jara, or old age, takes shelter of a devotee, kala kanya diminishes the devotee's fear. A devotee knows that after death he is going back home, back to Godhead, therefore he has no fear of death. Thus, instead of depressing a devotee, advanced age helps him become fearless and thus happy. Abhaya Charanaravinda, the lotus feet which make one fearless. O mind, this is a song by Govinda Das. O mind, just worship the lotus feet of the son of Nanda, which make one fearless. Having obtained this rare human birth, cross over this ocean of worldly existence through the association of saintly persons. Srila Prabhupada was named Abhay Charan by his father and Abhay Charanaravinda Das by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, which means the servant of the lotus feet of Krishna, which make one fearless. Therefore, by name and by personal example, Srila Prabhupada lived the life of the bold and fearless self-realized preacher of Krishna consciousness, who knew no fear and who was filled with compassion for the suffering of others. There was an incident where one of the devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was about to be executed on the Changa, I think it was called. So it says here that Lord Chaitanya asked him, while he was about to be executed, what was he doing? He said, the messenger replied, he was fearlessly, incessantly chanting the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Fearlessly, incessantly chanting. So that's the key to being fearless. And Srila Prabhupada was always brave and fearless. Even as a boy, he was brave, and his courage never failed him. This is a conversation that took place on a morning walk here in, I think, somewhere near the manor. Brahmananda, Calcutta, on the Maidan, there's that big building, that big memorial. Is that Prabhupada? Oh, Victoria Memorial. Brahmananda, that was built for the king when he was coming? Prabhupada, no, that was built in memory of Victoria. It was done imitating the Taj Mahal. It took 20 years. Sri Rajendranath Mukherjee of Martin Company, he took the contract. And after finishing it, he got this title, Sir. And when it was being constructed, I went to the top by crossing the scaffolding. Well, there's a story that there was some challenge that who would be brave enough to climb to the top of the scaffolding and put an Indian flag, independence, indicating the need, the desire for independence. So Prabhupada said he took the challenge and he climbed to the top. I went to the top, he said, by crossing the scaffolding. Brahmananda, so you must have been very brave. Prabhupada, yes, I am still brave. And then everybody was laughing. He says, otherwise, how could I come alone to preach Krishna consciousness? I'm still brave. Devotees, Jai Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada, some astrologer told that this boy, for executing his purpose, he will enter into the fire. Yes. So, Srila Prabhupada was fearless and brave, and he entered the fire for us. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Okay, so we've got another 6 minutes here. Anybody have any questions?